So hello and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC, so a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It's a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Ian Matheson, who is the new Associate Dean in the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs. Welcome to Grad Chat, Dr. Matheson.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And generally, I like to ask our graduate student and postdoc guests about how they ended up at Queen's in their current position. So would you mind telling us a little bit about how you came to your current role as Associate Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. We were chatting on the way here about how we did grad school together at the Faculty of Education way back. And I spent a year at the University of Regina just after I finished my PhD or was finishing it up, came here. And I did the last 6 years in the Faculty of Education as an assistant and then associate professor in special education. And Chris DeLuca is my predecessor in the role. And I think he just kind of recommended me as he was phasing out. He thought I would be a good fit for the role. And I hope it's been okay so far. I'm enjoying myself.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's great. It's, well, we miss Chris. It's nice to have you in the new role. So I was curious a little bit to learn about what that transition was like from PhD student to assistant professor and then now into a more administrative faculty role. Could you tell us a little bit about what it was like to make that jump?
Yeah, that's a good question. I am still trying to make sense of it because it feels like it's all happened so quickly. Moving from being a PhD student to my first academic appointment, as I said, I was at the University of Regina, was odd because when I started the role in Regina, I was still a PhD student. I hadn't defended, and I actually didn't defend until around this time of year. I think it was Valentine's Day or maybe a month after that that I defended ultimately. And during that year, you're starting as a new assistant professor with essentially handling your research program, doing service, and then a teaching load, which was a lot. But at the same time, I was still finishing up my PhD,
so I'm
doing revisions and getting ready for defense. And at the same time, oddly, the job came up at Queen's, and I wanted to come back. My wife's family is from here. My family now lives here, so this is where we wanted to be. So on top of all that, I'm secretly applying for this job, eventually getting mid-listed and then shortlisted. So I just remember going for runs or walks with my German Shepherd, and I was like talking to myself about the interview, you know, what I would say to this or my job talk or whatever. And it felt like we were expecting a new baby, our first.
Oh my goodness.
So it was a lot for sure. But I just kept my head down and I didn't have a lot of time to think about the transition. But I did think a lot about the transition from that to Queen's. And that felt like my first real one, because at that point, my PhD was behind me. And I felt more ready to step into. Now I can really join the ranks and feel what it's like to be a professor and not still have to worry about getting my PhD done. And that I would compare to, for those that are drivers or for those that aren't, in Ontario, we get a G1 license where you need to drive with somebody else who has their license. And then eventually you get your what's called your G2, and you don't have to have anybody in the car with you. And that's what it felt like for me, is that when I got my PhD and I was a professor at Queen's, I didn't have to have anybody in the car with me. In fact, I got to choose who was going to be in there with me. So it felt a little more free because I didn't really feel bound to say, I wonder what my supervisor is going to think of this idea. Now, I loved my supervisor and he was always supportive, but just not having that layer, I think I felt a little bit more open and free to say, where do I want to take my program of research? So that was really cool. But at the same time, I was starting at a place where all of the professors that I had were now my colleagues. And that was super weird. They were kind and supportive. But I think for me, psychologically, KM, I didn't really realize, like, it took me a couple of years to get over that hurdle. And I don't know what it's going to be like for students that might hear this or for students that have gone through the same transition. But I think it took me a while to get to a place where I was like reminding myself that I'm not a student anymore and I'm really in charge of a different kind of portfolio now. Supervising was always like the coolest thing to me because I've always loved collaborating and working with other people. And the fact that I've now got grad students of my own that largely feel like peers to me, I think that's generally my approach anyways, but they feel like peers that I can sit down with and we can think, what do you think of this? And what do you think of this? That's really been fun. And when I think about being a professor, at least here, you've got your program of research, you've got your teaching load, a bunch of courses, and then you've got your service commitments, so different committees that you might sit on. And of those three, I really like research and I really like teaching, but I always liked service. I always liked sitting on committees and thinking, what are we doing together? What are we going to be able to accomplish? And I think it's because I like helping people and just helping generally. And so when I think about why I feel that this is a really fun role so far and why I feel so far like it's been a good fit, is I think because it most closely emulates that service element where largely, as I see it, I'm coming to work in this role now and I'm looking to help people. People will email with issues they're dealing with, program issues come up. And my job, as I see it, is to think, how can I help? How can I help think about a solution that might work? What can we do to support this student, this faculty member, this program? I think that's really the job that we're charged with. So looking at it that way, I'm not surprised that I'm enjoying it as much as I am. Even if it's challenging and it's a heavy, heavy learning curve, I really am enjoying the work because it is so focused at its core on helping people.
Yes, and it's interesting how the three kind of components of research, teaching, and service follow regardless. They shift depending on your role, but they remain at the core of being a faculty member.
And absolutely.
And I think with graduate programs, you can see a little bit of a mirror of that as well, although less defined. But I think a lot of graduate students, regardless of their level and postdocs as well, are focused on research. Some are focused on teaching a little bit, depending on if they have a teaching assistantship or a TFship. And then service, right? Whether that's supporting your colleagues in the lab or in the department informally, or, you know, organizing a graduate student conference or working at the national or international level of your discipline, like participating in association work and that kind of thing. So it's interesting to see as people transition from maybe graduate student to faculty member to administrator faculty member, how we see those same kind of containers continue that carry a lot of the different work that academics do.
Absolutely. And I'm still very much figuring out like how to fit the research in. I've got plans to do that, but being so new to a role, there's still a significant transition period for me. So I'm carving out my time here and there, but I think I'm getting closer and closer to a sweet spot where I'm going to be able to continue to empower my grad students to run various projects that we have going on, maintain relationships with community members that we're working with, and still be able to contribute, hopefully, to my research fields.
No, and it's I'm sure, like an ever-changing balance, right?
Sure.
The different seasons of your career, the different seasons of your life, they all
like
have to
shift. Yeah, that's nice.
And like you mentioned, you are currently appointed as a faculty member in the Faculty of Education. And can you tell us a little bit about what your current research program is looking at?
Yeah. The last few years have been really interesting because it's been a lot of exploratory work with my students and I. We've been focused on trying to think about the individual education plan and how we can support our students with special education needs to better understand what's on that document, to put them in a position to advocate for their needs going forward. So the way we look at it, schools are getting better and better at meeting the needs of all learners. And this is a good thing, full stop. But we would say that as we get better and better at providing support for all in universal ways, that can obscure the real need for some students to get particular supports if we're not talking about it and talking to the students about how, hey, you need these things, we're putting them in place for you. So again, great if it's universally provided, that can help with stigma and all sorts of things. But at some point, we would argue that those students who have necessary supports, that needs to be explained to them to put them in a position to be able to advocate for themselves later on as they move through secondary school and eventually maybe into a post-secondary space or work. They're going to be the ones that need to own that information about themselves and to be able to talk to professors or employers to say, this is what I need and this is why I need it, those types of things.
sounds very important because I know there's, it seems like there's many changes going on in Ontario and in Canadian school systems across different provinces. So getting students to be able to advocate for themselves and understand what supports they need, I think that sounds very, very helpful for both students, parents, families, and the schools themselves. Are there some challenges that schools in Ontario or more broadly in Canada face in supporting students with exceptionalities or additional needs right now? Are there some challenges you see?
Probably the biggest issue that a lot of school boards and faculties of education together are wrestling with is how we support students with special education needs. Mm. Is it a full inclusion thing? Are we ready for that? So I think a lot of scholars that focus on inclusion would argue that this is something we should all be striving for. And in fact, probably everybody's pushing in that direction. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes there can be a bit of a chasm between where we think we should be and what we're actually able to do right now. And I think one of the issues is when we have knowledge about how things could work, how do we transfer that knowledge to teachers in the classroom that are dealing with very real issues all the time and doing their best to support students with and without special education needs? But when you're on the front lines, there are lots of issues, and it can be hard to put in place something that you're told to do in a professional development session. So I think a real issue is how do we give teachers the knowledge and skills and support that they need to make classroom spaces that are inclusive for all. And if we simply aren't at a place where we can do that, then what's the best alternative? Just keeping in mind that if we're working towards inclusion as much as we can, I think we also need to be honest with ourselves about what resources we have, what we can ask of teachers, what's realistic at this point to meet all learners' needs.
That tension between what could be and the excellent ideas and research that supports, you know, full inclusion, and then resources availability across different school boards and classrooms individually, and how to make those come together ideally. Now that makes a lot of sense. And I know many of our Queen's graduate students and our postdoc communities are parents themselves, often with younger children. What are some things you think parents can do to help their children excel academically in the current Ontario school system?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think about not just students with special education needs. I think any student, if you've got a child, if you're a parent or a guardian, you've got a child in our school system, I would say just talk to them about the challenges, obviously their passions and what's going well, but the challenges that they're experiencing. And so in the case where I've got three boys of my own and they experience different challenges, and I try to understand what is it specifically that you're struggling with? Why do you think that might be the case? And then what do you think we can do about it? And I think those are just simple questions that hopefully probably a lot of parents and guardians are asking their kids already. But we always say, talk to your kids. If you're talking to them anyways, ask about those things. Try to understand the challenges that they're experiencing, because I think the more we normalize that kind of dialogue and inquiry, the more they're probably going to adopt it and eventually own it, right? And start to say like, hey, I'm noticing I'm struggling, so what can I do about it? And they don't even necessarily need a guardian or a parent to provoke that kind of thinking.
So again, it sounds like it connects back to that advocacy piece of getting students to be able to advocate and understand themselves well. Oh, well, thank you. That's a very brief snapshot on research, but I want to focus a little bit more on your role as associate dean. So can you tell us a little bit more about it? I know you've just started, but what are some things in your portfolio?
Yeah, so I got a lovely document from Fahim and Chris and Tara that outlined, here's what the job is. And I think I keep going back to that and realizing, geez, they were so on point with that, because a lot of the different divisions within the role are very clear. And I think the amount of time I'm spending on those pieces are reflective of what they said, which is great. So as I understand it, a lot of our time is on what we call like student support, which could be things like if you have a student reaching out. Of course, right now there are a lot of issues happening that are affecting our students with connections to Iran. So we're trying to remind students and faculty and staff to have students reach out to us if we can do anything to support them. So any kind of supports, it could be appeals, it could be extensions. That's one piece of it, is anything we can do to support students. And then I think another piece is looking at how we can support programs and faculty and staff. And so we do have license within our role for what we call special projects. And so something I'm really passionate about that I've talked to you a little bit about too is like career development and how we can put our students in the best position to secure employment after they graduate, not just to finish and have them start that process, but how can we really get them thinking about that and how can we support them in their time while they're here? So that's also a piece of it. And then, of course, there are lots of different committees that that Tara and I sit on. So grad councils, and then also specific committees that might have a specific nature about them. So it could be focused on trying to identify policy related to artificial intelligence. That's what I'm sitting on. And various other types of roles that we hold that way, where we're sort of representing the School of Grad Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs to try to make decisions for the university. And then just various administrative stuff. So we go through any theses or defenses. We go through the paperwork there. So that's it could be considered less exciting stuff, but I think it's really cool because sometimes I recognize names and I'm reminded, oh yeah, this person just finished up. So yeah, it's a lot, Katie Marie, but it just feels very dynamic. It feels like every day I come in and I'm like, I have to remind myself of what I'm doing that day. But I really like that energy. And I like that, like, I got to be on and got to be ready for the next thing.
You know? There's always something fresh on the docket, right? You have your plans for the day and then something else pops up.
Exactly. You know that all too well, right? Yeah.
Your focus shifts and then, yes, return to the scheduled programming after. So you mentioned a little bit about some special projects and the committees and student and program support. I guess, what are you most excited about in this role? Because there's a lot of different moving parts. So what's something that is really exciting to you?
Yeah, I'm realizing that as I come up with ideas, I'm recognizing like people have already had these ideas and there's already a lot happening across the university in a lot of these areas. So I think my focus right now is trying to figure out who's doing what and where are they at in that process. But career development, like I said, is I think it's one of the most important opportunities that we have because, of course, employment seems to be getting more and more challenging for our students to secure. And the labor market is changing all of the time. And so I really want to think about how I can lean into connecting better with our graduates to figure out where they're going, what types of skills and knowledge they're using in those settings, and how that might be able to inform what we do here to better prepare them for that journey. And then, of course, trying to identify while they're here, what types of supports, workshops, events, anything like that, that we could provide to better prepare them for that next step. So I think it would be great, again, to have students come to us and have a pretty clear sense of the types of things they could do with their degree and then what it would take to get there. And then I think the question becomes, how can we at the SGSPA help? What events can we run? What supports can we provide? What programming can we get you enrolled in that's going to make you a more competitive candidate and give you a better chance of securing that employment that you're looking for?
And there's so many options for graduates of different programs across campus, right? Which I think is sometimes what can be overwhelming about the process is that in grad school, you develop all these different skills, whether they're qualitative or quantitative research, the kind of project management and determination and some of those, the resilience, more of those soft skills that you develop alongside some more tangible skills, like maybe you become great at a programming language or something like that. So you've got this mix of skills, but how do you translate that outside of a research setting, outside of a university setting, to a potential employer? I know Career Services is doing excellent work, and I think that there's a lot of opportunity for us to work with the School of Graduate Studies, to work with Career Services and other campus supports to really hone in on what is unique about the grad experience and what is changing. Like you said, the job market is constantly evolving, and it seems like at a really rapid pace right now. So I think that's also very exciting of how we can best support graduate students moving forward into their next roles after Queen's.
For sure.
And alongside this, I guess that's finding employment post-graduation is one challenge, but are there some other common challenges that you are noticing graduate students experiencing during their programs? And this can be, you know, as you're with your hat as associate dean or with your hat as a supervisor of graduate students, are there some common challenges you see?
Definitely funding. Like I think back to when you and I were grad students, and I think it was not that long ago, but a very different time. And increasingly we're hearing from students about precarity with employment, not being able to necessarily fund like accommodations, use of food bank, things like this are like the most important thing, right? Because they're about survival ultimately. And so we have a lot of students increasingly that bring families as well. And so they're not just necessarily thinking about feeding and housing and supporting themselves. They're thinking about supporting a whole family. So that I would say would be like a the priority is how do we ensure that we can give all of our students the kind of funding that they need to support themselves. And I think that's increasingly challenging when we have restraints on us as an institution or, you know, across the country as institutions in higher education. So I wish I had a quick and easy answer. I know that my colleagues, including yourself, like are constantly working on and thinking about this. But I think that would be the most top of mind issue is how do we ensure that all of our students have what they need to engage in the work that we're bringing them here to do?
No, and it's I know it's as you said, it's a challenge across Canada right now, the cost of living and and just, I mean, if I think about my own grocery bill over the last few years, it has increased substantially. So, and I know the pace at which those day-to-day expenses are increasing, you know, everyone's salaries or funding packages aren't necessarily keeping pace with how fast those things are increasing. And I know we, I mean, it's not like institutions can control what grocery prices are, but how can we figure out ways to make sure that students and postdocs and staff and the whole Queen's community is doing okay? How can we think about what we can do?
Absolutely. And I think as an educator yourself, like it's we always think about how if students aren't feeling like they have a full stomach, like they got enough sleep, all of those things, then they're probably not in a position to learn. And it's the same thing with our postdocs and graduate students, that if they're not feeling comfortable, if they're not feeling safe, all of those things, then they're probably not going to do the quality work that they could. You know, they're not going to meet their potential. And so I think about funding being related to like mental health and all of these other things that are connected. So I think, like you said, we have to get creative and work with the circumstances that we're in to try to ensure we can give students what they need, but then also think about the effects that funding can have on other parts of their life. So ensuring that we've got mental health and wellness supports in place and that students know about them and all of these other things that are surely connected.
Yes, it takes a holistic approach, right? Research takes a lot.
Great.
So you need to have, you need to be feeling well in many areas to do the best research that you can do.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I guess, what is some advice you would have for graduate students to make the most of their time at Queen's?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, like, what would I tell myself back as a graduate student? And I think you're just so busy and your head is, like, down, necessarily so, because there's so much that you need to focus on, from TA-ships potentially to research assistantships to your own program of research, like all the things that maybe are necessary for you. It's hard to, I don't necessarily feel comfortable saying, hey, do all the other things, because everyone needs to figure out what works. But I do think it's like fundamentally important to at least take some time to figure out what are the types of things that, that I could do in my first year, that I could do in my second year, that I wouldn't necessarily find out about because they're not compulsory. They're not necessary parts of my program. So the PhD community initiative is just one idea that comes to mind, but I had one of my graduate students participate in that, and she said it was incredibly valuable for her, made new relationships and built some new skills for her as well. And so I just think about, I didn't even recommend that to her. She found it on her own. So how can I do a better job as a supervisor to be aware of the types of programs we have? And that's not always easy because, of course, supervisors and faculty are busy. So as a student, I would just encourage them to check out, take some time, maybe once every few weeks, just do a quick scan and see what's going on, what events are available, what programs might I think about. And then I think at those pivotal points, like moving into your second year or moving into your third year, if you're in a longer program, what's my long-term plan this year? What are the things I must do? And then what are some things I could consider? And again, connecting it back to career development, what types of things might help me get to that or move on that pathway towards my ultimate goal of this type of job or that type of job following graduation?
Yes, and I think PhDCI is an excellent example of an extracurricular program that can kind of offer many opportunities to students in terms of networking, in terms of developing different skills, working in teams, getting to learn about a new industry or area, depending on who the community partner is. Like if that's more health-based or more arts-based or whatever, you know, whatever the organization that you're partnered with may be, that gives you insight into a whole new world that you maybe didn't know really existed or know about the jobs that happen in that world until you participate. And you get to meet a bunch of other PhD students, which is always nice too, to meet people outside of your program.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, that's one that I did not participate in as a graduate student, and I kind of wish I did.
We should have.
That's like one of the few programs I didn't try, and it sounds like a great time, so I wish I had of.
Me too.
Yeah, and I think there's some other great programs. Like I know we have 3-minute thesis coming up, which is a really great way to practice communication skills and some knowledge mobilization, how to translate your research to a non-specialist audience in 3 minutes or less. I think that's a great skill to to develop.
Or GradFlix being another one, right? Mm-hmm, so just trying to identify ways that we can help students mobilize the knowledge they're creating, all of this stuff. And again, like you said, there are a lot of options. It's not like everyone can do everything, but I think being aware of what is possible and then thinking about your ultimate goal or goals of employment and connecting those and thinking which of these types of programs might be worth my time and might really help prepare me for my next step. I think that's important. And that's probably the single piece of advice I would say is most important.
Mm-hmm. So yes, having that long-term vision and almost it sounds like doing a little bit of self-assessment of like, what do I know really well? What do I want to learn more about?
Yeah.
And how can I find a place to learn more about whatever skill I feel like I don't have or want to develop further. And I think Queen's is great for having many opportunities of all kinds, whether that's in your program, whether that's something the SGSPA offers, whether that's something another central service offers, be that like career services or student wellness. Like there's so many different opportunities to get involved and to learn all these things across campus. And I think yes, it can be a little overwhelming, but if you check in.
That's how I would describe my first couple of months in this program is because, like you said, I'm learning about all these things that are already happening. And I think that's been a heavy part of my transition is what's already happening here? What do I need to know about? So, yeah, I've really, really enjoyed the journey so far, and I'm looking forward to what's to come.
Yes, and I think, yes, for students as well to take that time and think and look across what is already happening and what they can tap into. And then if they find something that's missing. I think the great thing about Queen's is you can start a student club, you can start a group, you can create your own thing, right? If you're looking for something and it doesn't exist, you can also start it yourself. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming on the show. It has been great chatting with you, and I look forward to continue working with you on a daily basis in the SGSPA, and then maybe we can have you on again as throughout your term as projects develop, or if there's any updates you want to share with the Grad Chat community.
That sounds great, KM. Thanks for the opportunity. This was fun.
So that is it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. Until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.